Hey, everybody, you're listening to the Cross Culture Podcast, where we have conversations to help Christian leaders create a cross culture in their church. Wherever you're listening from, we hope that this conversation helps you take the next step of embracing God's beautiful, diverse vision for your church. Let's dive in. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the next episode of the Cross Culture Podcast. And man, we have a long lost friend. Our faithful co-host, pastor of Grace City Church, Pastor Will Plunk. It's been a few weeks, brother. How you been?
Yeah, man, I'm doing good. It's good to be back with you. I've been following the podcast while I haven't been on it.
That's good.
Honestly, and I've been learning a lot. I mean, as always, it's helpful to be thinking through these things. You know, even as you're going, as you live, and just being able to think through cross-culture life and ministry, worship with Courtney and hearing her story, that was great.
Yeah.
So y'all should go back and listen if you didn't get a chance to listen to those.
Not hear the Diversity is Different podcast, that was a good one.
It was a good one.
That was a good one. We got real honest, real transparent, which I appreciate her leading in that. So, man, well, it's good to be back. As always, I'm Philip, pastor of Radiant Church. We have Will, my co-host, back after a little bit of a break. So, Pastor Will, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to today's topic because it's really practical.
Yeah.
Really practical. And we're going to talk about problems and struggles with really cross-culture groups.
Okay.
How to make multi-ethnic groups and what are the problems with that? But AKA, why black people don't come in a small group.
So
we're going to talk about the issues, the problems with creating those spaces, creating those kind of environments, and really discipling well. Like, so Philip, you know, start us off.
Why
black people don't come in a small group?
There's a couple reasons. If you haven't got the gist already, we're getting practical now, man. Yep. If you haven't heard some of the theological foundations, the biblical precedents for why we're doing this, go back, listen to the first couple podcast episodes. But we're diving into the waters of practicality, right? So you've done the learning, you've done the reading, you've done the praying, you've got convicted, and now you're talking about how do I do this in my local church? And we're starting with small groups. Diversity in groups, AKA why black people won't join just small groups. I love it. So I think there's a couple reasons. First of all, let me just say that this, if that's a true reality in your church, you're not the only one, right? If you have a cross-culture congregation, a diverse church or mostly white church trying to transition, and you're wondering why, man, like I just can't get non-white folks to really buy in on a large scale, right? If you're wondering why, it's not just you. I just want to say you're not by yourself. Most churches struggle to get non-white folks to participate in small group environments. Now, I got some ideas on why.
Yeah.
And I think you do too. So let's talk about the barriers first. Let's talk about the barriers, the reasons why it's before we get into solutions. Let's talk about some of the problems. I think there's at least two broad categories of barriers for why black and brown folks don't, by and large, dive all into small groups. One, the goals of small groups are sometimes in opposition to the goals of what black and brown folks want small groups to be. Let me say it plainly.
Yeah.
For most white people, they want the small groups to be a place of fellowship and connection.
Yep.
For most black and brown people, they want small groups to be a place of Bible study and accountability. Let me say it even more plainly for the people in the back.
Say that.
Black folks are primarily not looking for more friends in your small group environments. And to be honest, most white folks aren't looking for more Bible in the small group environments. And so it becomes at odds with one another because they're looking for different things and the goals of the group are just not aligned with what people are looking for. Now, I'll say that just because that's what they're looking for doesn't mean that's not what they need. Right.
Most black
and brown folks need deep, meaningful relationships. Right. And most white folks, maybe they're not looking for it, but they need more Bible and Bible study.
Absolutely.
But that's not what they're looking for. And so how we talk about groups sometimes puts off one group or the other while attracts one group more than the other. So am I just making this up, Pastor?
No, absolutely. And I think even to that point, you got to go, okay, even how we talk about groups, how we promote groups, how people sign up for groups. You just got to be thinking about what are they advertising?
Join a group, make a friend, right?
Join a group, make a friend. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, and even just the way in which black and brown folk are going to establish friendships and family and community and, you know, like in the way in which white folk think about that, all those things can be different. And so, no, not at all. I think that's absolutely the aim. And to your point, I appreciate you saying that it doesn't mean that white folk don't need Bible and accountability and black folk don't need friendship. But I think as we are addressing the problem, you know, in groups or in any area, you go, okay, as you communicate it, oftentimes people pick a thing based on what they want, not necessarily what they need.
Yeah.
And so you have to communicate with that recognition in mind.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And so, I mean, for many churches, small groups is like the primary environment, right? Would you say?
It is. Yeah.
I think a lot of folks have defaulted to small groups being the primary environment. And I would have guessed and amen that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's a good thing. I think most people experience deep, meaningful transformation through relationship, not necessarily even through teaching on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not downplaying preacher. We're both preachers,
yep.
Right? We both preach most Sundays of the year. And so I'm not downplaying that. But when you look at the discipleship journey of somebody, I think those small group environments, whether it's Sunday school, whether it's Bible study, whether it's a small group, like I think it can take different forms. But I think that relational, dialogical, like I can talk back and interact, I think that's where people learn.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people go. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing that groups are a deal. I mean, both of our churches have small groups, right? Like you've got small groups, right?
We do. Yeah. We say, and we even say that groups are one of the primary ways we disciple our members.
Absolutely.
We say that that, like most of our members could say that.
Yeah.
But here's my question. So if I want more black people in our groups, should I just make my groups Bible studies?
Yes. Let's go beyond the goals, right? Let's go beyond the goals, because I think there are different goals.
Okay.
But I think even if you were to make them Bible studies, the second barrier for why black and brown folks are not joining your small groups is because of what happens in the group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me just say this. Like, our goal here is to be helpful. Not offensive.
Okay.
But we've got to talk about it because these things are known by members of the group and oftentimes ignored by church leadership.
Yeah.
So everything we're about to say is not going to be novel for the average group member, but may seem a little abrasive or new for the average church leader.
Yeah.
All right. So let me preface by saying that. Here's what happens in the groups. Even if we made a Bible study, there's a couple of barriers that inside of a group that still will make it hard for black and brown folks to go all in on small groups. In no particular order, I would say it's food. I would say it's children.
Okay.
And I think I'll stop there. I think I've offended enough people. Let's start with
people like to eat.
Black people do. Everybody likes to eat,
everybody
right?
Likes to eat.
So why
food is
would
a great
food?
Uniter? Like, right? I mean, I should have food. Acts
absolutely.
2. Acts 2.
They
will
break
breaking
bread. They will breaking bread, right? Everybody loves to eat in fellowship and talk, right?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
We eat all the time at the church. Like, so we do family dinners and all this kind of stuff. And so why would food be such a barrier if everybody loves it?
Well, maybe when I say food, do I mean the same thing when other people say food? Maybe we mean different things when we say food.
I think that's the key.
Yeah, yeah.
When I say tea, you may be thinking sweet tea.
Yeah.
You may be thinking unsweet tea.
Right.
But either way, when I put it to my mouth and taste it, if it's not what I expected it to be, I'm mad.
All right, let's go there. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
When I say mac and cheese.
If you say mac and cheese and you meant stovetop mac and cheese, you are wrong.
Let's put mac and cheese on the side. You know what I'm saying?
You are incorrect.
Get me a little bit of, you know what I'm saying?
If you're not cooking, if you're not cooking mac and cheese in a pan in the oven,
that's right.
You are incorrect. Mm. Right? And so, well, at least to my culture, right?
Thank you for correcting
me. Thank you for correcting myself. Yeah, you're incorrect to me.
It's not an objective truth, an objective reality. But yeah.
I mean, we'll talk about it off air. But if you say food, that's what people are thinking. That we're using the words football, and some people are thinking soccer, and other people are thinking what we think of as American football.
Yeah,
and so when we say food, it means a couple of different things, man. It means taste, it means preferences, and we got to throw in, talking about food, talking about kids, we got to throw in pets.
Pets, yeah.
We got to throw in pets.
Dogs.
Right? If I, Joe Blow, black Christian, am convinced, cajoled, bribed, and persuaded to join a group. Mm. And I show up, and the first thing I'm greeted by is a dog at the door. Mm. I know he loves everybody. I know he never bites. I know he just wants to smell me. I hear all that. I'm never coming back.
Yes.
I might not stay the whole time now.
Yeah.
But I can guarantee you I'm never coming back.
And when I do stay, I am distracted.
Oh, yeah.
I am distracted the whole time.
Where's the dog?
Is it going to lick my hand by accident and I'm going to go wash myself?
The whole time I'm looking around for where's the dog. The whole time. Cats, birds.
They be jumping up on your lap, man. It's like the dog's the king of the castle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is very true. You do got to pay attention to even thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
With groups, they're the places in the church that have the most autonomy because
Why is
they
that?
Have the least oversight.
Yes.
You know, there's the greatest amount of diversity actually in how each group within your own church is expressed. And so you might even be talking about, I think this is a the key thing you want to listen to. Even when you're training group leaders or talking about groups, are you're going to talk about a lot of these big principles and like, what are we going to do theologically? Yep. What are we going to work through? What are we going to have reflection questions? We're going to reflect on the sermon. We're going to study the Bible. Yes, yes, yes. But you actually got to get really practical with them, because they're not going to be thinking about these things that can actually be big barriers for cross culture groups.
Yeah. You know, 'cause the reality is our own culture, especially for majority culture, is invisible to us.
Yeah, that's good.
We don't think different, we think normal. This is just normal.
Yeah.
Right? A fish doesn't know that he's swimming in water until he's taken out. Mm-hmm. Right? And so oftentimes, especially for majority culture, I think in minority culture, there's this double consciousness where we realize who we are and who we're not and where we are and where we're not. But for majority culture folks, these things may be invisible. Like, there's nothing malicious. There's nothing ill-intentioned by it. It's just invisible. It's normal to have a dog in the house.
Yeah.
Which I didn't learn about dogs in the house until I became an adult. I'm be honest with you. Like, when I got to college, I was like, wait, y'all have dogs in the house?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was a new thing for me. And so it's important to realize that there's no such thing as normal. It's just your culture versus other cultures.
And,
right?
And that's a good word, Pastor Philip, because if you think about a home, mm-hmm. a home in a unique way actually carries culture. It embodies culture.
God, yeah.
Like food. Food is a huge culture carrier. I mean, all these different cultures have different foods which communicate something. Mm-hmm. And so when they come into a space and we're eating food and we're seeing dogs or seeing the way kids are behaving, like those things communicate culture, and it can communicate you're a part of this culture or you're not. Or you're not. And so you actually can come in and feel very othered just because of the way the environment is in the group.
Absolutely.
And you got to train your leaders to think through these things.
Absolutely. So talking about barriers, I think the food deal is a barrier that we may not even know just because we all have a preference that's unstated.
Yeah.
And it's not about, you know, one food tastes better or different. It's just not what I expected. Mm-hmm. If I taste something that looks like I know what it tastes like and I taste it and it don't taste like what I expected, it becomes a barrier, right? Because I don't want to be rude. Here's the reality. Most black and brown folks, especially in churches that are not mostly black and brown, most black folks do not want to be disruptive to what you're doing, right? Most of them just realize, okay, this is what's happening, and I'm just going to opt out. Mm. So they're not going to complain. They're not going to like really try to change things oftentimes. They will just opt out. They will visit once and never come back. Mm. Right. That's why sometimes even on a Sunday morning, you have new families visit for one time who are maybe, from a minority context, if you're a majority church, and they don't come back. They're very nice. They're very polite. They stay and talk with you in the foyer and have conversations. And you're like, man, I had a great conversation with this new couple, and you never see them again.
Yeah.
Because most black and brown folks, because we're trained to be minorities in this culture, we have learned how to navigate, to be polite, to be nice, but also to realize this place isn't for me.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, and a quick little hack for cross culture church too is to actually, if you can call the person who leaves and doesn't stay at your church and get them to tell you why they left, which might be hard, but try, you will learn something.
Whew.
You will learn something. Yeah. Or we've done this before. Mm-hmm. We got somebody who's the friend of the person to call them and ask them, and then you learn something. So, yes, so you actually learn what your culture is doing, and you learn about your blind spots.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Groups, once again, because like you said, Pastor Will, they're so autonomous, right? And I know every pastor listening to this, if you have small groups ministry and you're part of a small group, you're like, what, man, our groups are great. Because you're basing it off of the group that you're in. Of course, the pastor's group is going to be great. It's going to be friendly. It's going to be cross-cultural. It's going to be aware. It's going to be, you know, rich theological study, deep, meaningful moments of prayer. Like, it's going to be all of that because the pastor's in the room.
Yeah.
But the other groups, like the Wild Wild West, right?
Yeah,
for sure. It depends on the leader. It depends on how their day went. It depends on how their kids are acting. Like, it depends on so many variables. And some of those things form barriers in just how we do it. So we talked about the goals of the group, right? What most white folks and what most black and brown folks are looking for in a group are very different. We've talked about the food deal and the pets deal. It sounds humorous and small, but y'all, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
And if you're serious about being a cross-cultural church, like, these small things are things that are small, so they're easy to change.
Yeah.
So just because a small thing, your default should not be, well, why should it matter? If it's a small thing, then just change it.
Yeah.
If it really don't matter, then just change it. So, but we got, before we wrap up talking about some of the difficulties, we got to talk about kids.
Yeah, we do got to talk about kids.
We got to talk about kids.
Yeah.
Here's why kids matter when it comes to being a barrier for diversity in groups. And I'm just going to say it the only way I know how to say it.
Go for it.
Please send me an email. there will be very few things that'll make black folks angrier faster than an undisciplined child.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't immediately make black folks angry. Like, instantly. Like, yeah. 0 to 100 is watching an undisciplined child.
Yeah.
And we're not mad at the child.
Mm-mm. And right? Their fault.
It's not their fault.
It's not their fault. Yeah.
Right? We are looking at the parent like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Little Timmy has been swinging from the chandeliers for the last hour and a half in this group. And I know we're trying to pray and read and go greet, but I can't take my eyes off the fact that he is not listening to nothing you say. You'd have told Timmy to get off that chandelier for an hour.
Timmy,
you know. Like, this is a larger conversation, right? The parenting conversation is a larger conversation.
It is.
I think you and I have talked about it. Just a little side note. You and I have talked about how most, just in our pastoral journey, trying to come alongside parents, being parents ourselves and struggling with those realities. Like, most parents are parenting from a place of trauma and reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Reacting to the experiences that they had and not wanting to be that,
right.
Reacting to the pain that they experienced and not wanting to share that. And so sometimes there's an overcorrection away from some healthy boundaries and healthy discipline. And so I get that this is a larger conversation than just diversity, right? There's a lot of stuff at play here, but it does matter. Does it matter? Like,
it does. I remember actually, I used it in a sermon illustration. I got a little bit of negative feedback.
Let's go.
Anyways, I talked about the efficacy of the call of a black mother.
I love how you class that up.
You know what I'm saying? When she calls, the kids respond.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of times, like, you know, with others, it's not. And again, we can talk about cultural differences. Mm-hmm. And there can be struggles in black cultural parenting and white cultural parenting.
Sure.
So we're not trying to actually, you know, say one is better than the other.
Absolutely.
But we are kind of recognizing that, again, if you grew up with one parenting style or you have kids and you have different expectations and you come into a context where, if you're a black person and you're used to discipline, you interpret, and I do think rightfully here, you interpret discipline as an act of love.
Mm-hmm.
And then
it's healthy discipline.
Healthy, godly discipline as an act of love. And even when you hear the word discipline, you don't just hear correction, because discipline is actually a bigger word than that.
Shaping, forming, deception.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but you understand it that way, and you come into a space where these kids are not to the same degree disciplined. Well, it can make you question things, not even about yourself, just about a culture. Like, what's happening? Like, are they actually going to instill this into their children?
Yeah.
You know, and so we just want to be aware, again, for a cross-culture church, cross-culture groups, how are we coming across?
Mm-hmm.
And are we actually making every effort to make room for all cultures?
Yeah.
And so the way our kids behave
matters.
That when they wilding out like that. Or the middle of the group just kind of going crazy the whole time,
mm-hmm.
distracting, and something can be done.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to affect it.
Absolutely. Just like the where is the dog question. Like, like, if you have an animal in the room, like, most black and brown folks are going to be just not paying attention to what's happening. They're just wondering, where's the dog?
Yeah.
Where is he? Right. I don't want to sneak up on me. I don't want to bite my, like, I'm that's what I'm focused on, is where. That's oftentimes now the focus of most black and brown folks in the group is somebody going to get to me?
Yeah.
Ain't nobody going to, like, the whole time they're thinking, ain't nobody going to say nothing.
Uh-huh.
Ain't nobody going to do nothing. Like, they're missing the Bible study. They're missing the prayer. Like, they're just missing all these elements that we hope groups produces and cultivates, because it's a legitimate barrier. And I think it's not one of those things where I think some of the barriers are you need to grow as a person.
Yeah.
Right. I think some of the barriers are we need to do something as a community. And I think these things that we've kind of listed are things that we can do as a community.
Yeah. And to be clear, we're not saying that kids can't be a part of group.
Yes.
That is not what we're saying. Yeah, they should be. I mean, even in black culture, like, it's, you know, it can be, it's very familial.
Absolutely.
So you got this person who ain't your aunt, but she treating, you know, she discipline treats you, you know, disciples you like an aunt. So I think that we're not saying that, just to be clear.
Yeah.
We're not saying kids can't be a part of group, they shouldn't be discipled by the group, or you want to exclude them from that type of experience. Instead, we're saying the way in which we're disciplining kids, parenting kids, all that stuff is going to actually negatively or positively affect the group being cross-cultural.
I think that's the key, is just realizing that it does have an effect.
Yeah.
We're not saying it's good or bad. It does have an effect. And we're not, to your point about the things that we're not saying, we're not talking about the single parent who's new to the group that's just figuring it out.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think there's some ways to come alongside and help. We're not talking about the newborn baby who's crying because babies cry. Like, we're not talking about that. We're talking right. about the 9-year-old, right, who's the child of a mature believer or a group longtime group member.
Yeah.
And you're like, bro, what's happening right now? Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're running back and forth telling stories, like middle of prayer time, like they're singing song. Like, we understand kids will be kids, but yeah. realize how that could be a barrier for the new person, mm-hmm. right? For the unbeliever who's just now distracted, can't hear what's going on. And particularly for ethnic minorities, right? Where yeah. that's so jarring from the cultural expectation to the point of being a legitimate barrier and yeah. a distraction.
Yeah.
So there's lots of barriers.
There are lots of barriers. And I think when it comes to groups in general, just the barrier to, like, well, let me ask you this question.
Yes,
Philip. The formation of groups.
Mm-hmm.
In what ways can there be barriers even into their formation? So, like, I'm a pastor, I'm a Christian leader.
Yep.
I have some type of influence in the church. We want to do groups. Mm-hmm. We do think groups are going to be discipleship. Is there anything I go, hey, before I even get started, maybe this could be a barrier. Before I even start forming groups, like whether it's communication or whether anything like that.
I think how you talk about groups, as you mentioned, is going to be important.
Yeah.
I think as a leader, if you're getting groups off the ground, most people, I would say most, but there's a temptation as a Christian leader to think of groups as a strategy for the church. But it's not just a strategy for the church. It's an environment for your people.
Yeah, that's good.
So before just deciding how do we want groups to enhance the strategy of the church, discipleship, church growth, multiplication, engagement, leadership training, all those things are good. You also got to decide what kind of environment do we want people to experience?
Yeah.
Right. So it's good that it's a strategy for the church. Cool. It's intentional. It's aligned. Awesome. But what kind of environment do we want the people to experience? Not just how do we want this thing to advance the goals of the church?
So I hear you saying you got to know the ends before you really start working on the means.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? Like you got to know yeah. what your end you're trying to reach before you even start going, okay, what am I going to do with groups? Like yeah. what are the goals
yeah.
of groups and who is determining the goals? Like, again, yeah. if we keep working backwards, who is in charge of groups? Who is mm-hmm. setting the vision for groups? Are there people weighing into those conversations yeah. that actually have cross-cultural competency? I mean, you just got to be aware. Because that's going to create barriers before even groups exist, you got barriers.
Absolutely. So most churches, if you're a pastor or Christian leader listening, you probably are part of a church that probably has groups just because most churches have groups. Whether they're home groups, Bible study groups, church groups, like there's some kind of environment that's not the Sunday morning service where believers are gathered.
Yeah.
A lot of it's going to be at home, not all of it, right? And so I would say if you see a percentage of your congregation by and large not engaging.
Yeah.
Black folks, young folks, old folks, married folks, single folks. If you see a part of your congregation not engaging in that environment, ask them why.
Yeah.
Ask them why.
Yeah.
Right? And really don't settle for the answer they give you at first.
That's so true.
Like, because they're going to be nice. They're going to be polite. Once again, that assimilation mindset of, hey, this is what you do.
Right.
Nothing I say is going to change that. So let me just not be controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If I really believe that nothing I say is going to change your mind, then I'm just going to try to have peace in this moment.
Yeah.
So you may have to pull from them a little bit. You may have to take some of their suggestions seriously, implement quickly.
Yeah.
So they know, oh, man, I told pastor such and such that, or I told leader that such and such this, and that thing changed.
Mm.
That creates a credibility now that opens up more honesty.
It does.
And so find the group that's not participating in your groups by and large, not just the individuals, but just are these groups of individuals representative of a particular group? Hmm. Like, man, single people are just not joining our groups.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what's going on where out of the 100 folks, single folks, like 80 of them are in no group anywhere?
Wow.
That might be some questions I need to ask, right? Or, you know, 90% of the black and brown folks in our church are actively not in a church. And here's the kicker. They're actively serving in other places.
Yeah.
They're showing up regularly. They're serving on a team. Like, they give, but this one area, they're just not connecting with.
Yeah.
Ask them why.
And I think that's a good question just to know, okay, I'm going to ask them why.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask them why. One thing I'd say, too, is you just want to be aware of where people come from and their backgrounds.
Yeah.
Because if someone also, and Pastor Philip, like he got some of the statistics on this stuff, but, but if people did not grow up with groups too, mm-hmm. They might still be very advantageous. Like, okay, cool. This is what the church does. I'm gonna do groups, but it also can feel like a foreign experience.
Absolutely.
And so you just want to be aware, okay, that people grow up in Sunday school. What were they doing in that kind of Sunday school? Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to help inform the decisions you make too, because that's going to help you know, when I talk about groups, this person, this is a foreign thing to them.
Yeah.
So I actually need to give some description because from the majority culture, white people, they're going to come. They actually already have expectations about what groups are.
Yeah.
So if your church is majority white, your groups, even before you form them, are going to be moving in a direction because all of your people have ideas about what they're going to be.
Absolutely.
So you're going to have to, in some ways, go upstream a little bit when you try to help them kind of reframe what groups are in your church.
Absolutely. No, that's good, man. So I feel like we need to. We shared all the bad news. I feel like we had to talk about some solutions, but we're out of time.
Yeah.
So how about this, y'all? We're going to do a part two on some of these solutions, right? I'm not saying it's the solution. We're just going to share some stuff that we've tried to overcome some of these barriers. But just to recap, there are very real barriers, not imaginary, not just get over it, but very real barriers for why some people, particularly across racial and cultural lines, do not participate in small groups. We've mentioned some of them, right? The goals, you know, most white folks want fellowship connection. Most black folks and brown folks want Bible study and accountability, right? They want to go deeper. We talked about some of the methods, what happens during a group, food, pets, kids, like those are the big three, right? That we got to at least have some conversations around. But just also just as you just said, like, there's also an expectation. Like I personally did not experience small group environments until I got into ministry.
Yeah.
I've been going to church my entire life. And I didn't personally experience a small group environment until I got into ministry. And so, like, to your point, that can be a foreign thing for some, where it maybe takes some understanding, may take some patience, it may take some, hey, help us build this together versus just join what we're doing.
Right.
It may take all of that. But either way, it should lead to some real honest conversations with some folks in your church, particularly the people that are not engaging in your current groups model.
So, Pastor Philip, we're leaving them with a cliffhanger.
We are.
Strategies. Part two. Get ready.
Part two next week. We got time. We're going to share some stuff, man. Hopefully this has been helpful. Hey, as I say it always, go to crossculturecollective.com, especially on this type of conversation. We would love to hear your thoughts, your feedback. There's a contact form. Man, we will really want to learn how we can improve these conversations. We want to begin to answer your specific questions. So go to crossculturecollective.com. Hit us on the contact form so that we can be helpful to you. Thank you, as always, for joining us in the Cross Culture Conversation. Pastor Will, I'll see you next time.
Sounds good.
Hey, thanks for joining our conversation today. This podcast is a resource of the Cross Culture Collective. If you want to learn more about who we are or what we're up to, you can visit us online at crossculturecollective.com or on all the socials at The Cross Culture Collective.